Have you ever wondered what makes certain companies not just survive, but really truly thrive? Even in industries that might seem, well, on the surface, a bit traditional, maybe even predictable.
Yeah, those businesses you probably drive past every single week.
Exactly. But you rarely stop to consider the complex engine running beneath that familiar facade. Today, we're doing exactly that. We're pulling back the curtain on a market leader that consistently seems to outperform expectations. We're taking a deep dive into AutoZone, Inc. Stock ticker is EO.
Right. The largest retailer of aftermarket automotive parts in the United States.
The biggest one.
And our mission for you today is really to unpack a comprehensive investment analysis that you've provided us. Our goal is to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge, the key insights.
Kind of a shortcut for understanding them.
Exactly. A shortcut to truly understanding how AutoZone operates, what its unique strengths are, and frankly, the surprising dynamics shaping the entire auto parts world.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
We'll cover everything from what makes their business so incredibly resilient to, well, the massive long-term shifts in the automotive landscape and how they manage their money with almost scientific precision.
It's quite striking, isn't it? A company primarily selling car parts is consistently described as a high-quality, resilient market leader.
Mm-hmm. Consistent financial performance.
Those aren't terms you always associate with retail, especially parts retail. That's a powerful statement for what might seem like a straightforward business. So, what are the secrets under its hood? Let's maybe start by understanding the broader industry it operates within.
Okay. To really understand AutoZone's, let's call it, enduring success, we first need to grasp the sheer scale and the unique characteristics of the automotive aftermarket industry itself.
Right, the context.
Exactly. This isn't just some niche market. It's an enormous economic force. The global aftermarket for automotive parts was valued somewhere between, say, $421 billion and $469 billion in 2023-2024.
Globally.
Globally. And if we zoom in on AutoZone's primary turf, the U.S. light-duty market, that alone is projected to exceed $405 billion in 2024.
Over $400 billion just in the U.S. alone? That really makes you rethink the scale. It's clearly not just about the occasional oil change or, you know, a simple repair.
Not at all.
It's this immense economic engine keeping millions of vehicles on the road.
So what's actually driving this growth? Is it subject to the usual economic ups and downs, or is there something more fundamental at play?
Well, what's particularly noteworthy here is that the growth is quite healthy, and crucially, it's remarkably non-cyclical, at least not in the way many other industries are.
Less sensitive to recessions, maybe.
And much less sensitive, yeah. Globally, it's projected to grow at a compound annual growth rate, a CAGR, between 3.3% and 3.8% through the next decade. But for the U.S. segment, it's actually forecast to grow even faster. We're talking a robust 5.8% CAGR through 2026.
So faster growth in the U.S.
Right. And this isn't just a temporary bump. It's propelled by powerful, durable, secular trends that we really need to examine closely. Okay, secular growth drivers. So these are the fundamental forces pushing demand for car parts higher, largely independent of short-term economic wobbles. What are the biggest of these underlying trends bolstering this industry?
Okay, the single most important tailwind, the largest driving force, is simply the aging vehicle fleet.
People keeping their cars longer.
Precisely. In the U.S., the average age of light vehicles hit a record 12.6 years in 2024.
12 and a half years average.
Average. And it's projected to climb even higher to 12.8 years in 2025. The profound insight here is that, well, vehicle deterioration has become a powerful growth engine. People are almost forced to repair, and older cars are, frankly, an aftermarket goldmine.
And why are people keeping them so long?
It's a direct result of a few factors that will probably resonate with you. One, new and used car prices are high. Really high.
Tell me about it.
Two, vehicle durability has actually improved significantly thanks to manufacturing advancements. Cars just last longer. And three, economic uncertainty makes people think twice about replacing a car if they can keep the one they have running safely. So the bottom line is simple. People are keeping their cars longer. And older cars, just by their nature, require more frequent maintenance and repairs.
That certainly rings true. I've definitely felt that squeeze of high car prices myself. So if people are holding onto their vehicles longer, where's the most profitable sweet spot for these repairs? Is it just any older car, or is there a particular age range that's most lucrative for aftermarket parts retailers like AutoZone?
That's an excellent question, and there definitely is a sweet spot. The industry usually categorizes vehicles between 6 and 12 years old as being, let's say, prime for repairs.
To 12 years.
Right. This is typically when they're out of the manufacturer warranty and their components naturally start needing more frequent maintenance, more part replacements.
Things just start wearing out.
Exactly. The significant point for AutoZone and its peers is that nearly 85% of the total U.S. fleet is currently 4 years or older.
85%.
Yeah. Which means there's this vast and continually growing customer base for aftermarket retailers. It represents a huge, fertile pool of vehicles ripe for repair, fueling really consistent demand.
Okay, so beyond just the age of the car, what else makes vehicles need more parts? I mean, I'm guessing it's not just sitting in the driveway gathering dust.
Absolutely not. Another key driver is vehicle miles traveled, or VMT. It's pretty straightforward logic. The more miles driven, the more wear and tear on components.
Makes sense.
Which directly fuels demand for replacement parts. U.S. VMT increased by 1.2% in the 12 months ending July 2024. So that consistent driving consistently supports demand for everything from oil filters and brake pads to tires and engine components. It's a pretty direct correlation between activity and parts consumption.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, what about all the tech in modern cars? You know, all those sensors, complex computer systems, the screens everywhere. Does that actually make it easier or harder for people to fix them?
Ah, that's a critical factor. And it falls under this trend of increasing vehicle complexity. Modern cars are just packed with tech. Advanced driver assistance systems, ADAs, intricate sensors, sophisticated software.
Yeah, way beyond just changing a spark plug.
Exactly. And while it's amazing for safety and comfort, this complexity makes repairs much, much more difficult for the average vehicle owner. It's not just about wrenches anymore. It's about specialized diagnostic software, proprietary tools, advanced training, things most home garages simply don't have.
Right.
This technological shift directly pushes more consumers away from the do-it-yourself or DIY segment and towards the larger professional do-it-for-me or DIFM segment.
So it's an opportunity for the pros.
It is. While it presents challenges, you know, requiring specialized tools and training, it's also a huge opportunity, especially for larger players like AutoZone, who can actually meet those technical demands for the professional shops.
So who is doing the bulk of the repair work these days then? Are we talking about the skilled home mechanic tinkering away, or are most people taking their cars to professionals?
Right, so that brings us to the two primary customer segments, DIY and DIFM. The do-it-for-me, or DIFM segment, is by far the dominant one. We're talking about accounting for approximately 78% of aftermarket product volume in 2023.
Wow, over three quarters.
Over three quarters. These are your professional repair shops, your service stations, dealerships. Their key needs are rapid parts availability, high-quality components, and strong commercial relationships with suppliers.
EB is key for them.
Absolutely. For a professional repair shop, time is money. A car stuck on a lift waiting for a part means lost revenue and, frankly, dissatisfied customers. So this DIFM segment is AutoZone's primary growth area, and we'll definitely delve deeper into their strategy there soon.
Okay. And for the remaining 22%, which is the DIY segment, the home mechanics what typically drives their decisions to tackle repairs themselves.
Yeah, the do-it-yourself segment represents that other 22% of product volume. This segment actually saw a pretty significant surge during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Right. Everyone was stuck at home.
Exactly. People had more time at home. They sought to save money on services. And while its share has normalized somewhat since then, many consumers who turned to DIY during that period have actually stuck with it.
Interesting.
But the primary motivator for DIY customers is overwhelmingly cost savings, which generally makes them more price sensitive than DIFM customers.
Okay, now let's address the elephant in the garage, a topic on many people's minds. Electric vehicles. EVs. It feels like potentially a big looming threat to a traditional auto parts business built on internal combustion engines. Is AutoZone bracing for an EV storm, or is it maybe more nuanced than that?
It's absolutely the most significant long-term secular change facing this industry, no question. And it definitely poses a fundamental threat to the traditional aftermarket model.
Because they have fewer parts.
Drastically fewer moving parts.
Yeah.
Electric vehicles, or EVs, have much simpler powertrains compared to internal combustion engine or ICE vehicles. They eliminate over 150 component types, things like spark plugs, fuel filters, exhaust systems, catalytic converters.
Oh, 150 types gone.
Gone. This fundamentally changes the game for many traditional aftermarket parts.
So is this an immediate crisis for AutoZone's core business? Like, are they feeling the pinch right now?
Well, the timing is really crucial here. The impact of EVs on aftermarket sales is currently negligible. We're talking less than 1% of product volume in 2023.
Less than 1%.
Yeah. And this is primarily because the vast majority of aftermarket revenue, over 96%, is generated by vehicles that are at least 4 years old and typically out of warranty.
Right, the sweet spot we talked about.
Exactly. The average age of EVs on the road right now is only 3.7 years. So it will likely be a decade or more before EVs constitute a meaningful portion of that crucial out-of-warranty vehicle fleet that drives the bulk of repair demand.
Okay, so they have time.
They have a very long runway to adapt and innovate. It gives them time to evolve their product mix, their services, their expertise.
That's a huge relief for them then, I imagine. A lot more time to strategize than some might assume. But beyond the disappearance of old parts, do EVs create new aftermarket opportunities? I mean, it can't all be about less parts, can it?
No, they absolutely do create new opportunities, and some are actually quite substantial. EVs require specialized components that are often more complex and expensive. Think battery modules, power control units, advanced cooling systems.
Things that still break or need maintenance.
Precisely. But even more interesting for the aftermarket are potential recurring revenue opportunities in existing categories. For example, tires.
Tires? How so?
Well, due to their higher weight, mm-hmm. because of the batteries and that instant torque delivery EVs have.
Right, they're quick off the line.
Very quick. They experience approximately 20% more tire wear than comparable ICE vehicles.
20% more wear.
Around that, yeah. So a key insight here is that tires represent a significant recurring revenue opportunity that directly benefits aftermarket retailers, regardless of the powertrain. People will always need tires.
Tires, tires, tires. That's a practical and powerful insight. I hadn't really thought about that specific wear factor. Anything else surprising that emerges from the EV transition for parts?
Yes. Another slightly surprising area is brake systems. Because EVs rely so heavily on regenerative braking to recapture energy.
Right, they use the motor to slow down.
Exactly. The traditional friction brakes are used much less frequently. Now, what's often overlooked is that this reduced usage can actually lead to corrosion and rust on the brake components from underuse rather than wear from overuse.
So they rust before they wear out?
Potentially, yes. This creates a new specific demand for specialized brake components and services down the line. It's a different kind of maintenance need, but it's a maintenance need nonetheless.
So it's not just a distant thunderstorm, but maybe also a new horizon of opportunities. That's a much more nuanced picture than simply EVs kill auto parts. This all sounds like a really complex dance of managing vast inventory. How crucial is the supply chain in this industry, especially for a leader like AutoZone?
Oh, the supply chain is absolutely critical. It's often the competitive edge in this industry. It relies on an incredibly complex global network. The ability to effectively manage vast inventory assortments, remember those mega hubs with 100,000 SKUs,
right,
and maintain strong relationships with a diversified base of suppliers. That is a critical determinant of success. Large retailers like AutoZone leverage their immense scale and purchasing volume to negotiate favorable pricing and, crucially, extended payment terms from suppliers.
Which helps their cash flow.
Massively. This is a key source of competitive advantage and capital efficiency that smaller players simply can't match. It really highlights how what seems like a simple retail business on the surface is actually deeply reliant on sophisticated global logistics and strategic vendor relationships.
Okay, so AutoZone operates within this massive, evolving industry. How does it actually stack up against its direct rivals? Is it a free-for-all out there, or is the market structured in a particular way?
It's definitely not a free-for-all. It's what economists would call a mature oligopoly.
An oligopoly. Few big players.
Exactly. It's dominated by just a few national players. AutoZone, O'Reilly Automotive, Advance Auto Parts, and Napa Auto Parts, which is part of Genuine Parts Company. These few players collectively control the vast majority of the market share, creating pretty significant barriers to entry for smaller competitors.
And within that oligopoly, where does AutoZone sit? Are they truly the top dog in terms of market presence and, you know, customer reach?
AutoZone is unequivocally a leader, and in several key aspects, the dominant player. They boast the largest footprint by U.S. store count. We're talking 6,537 domestic locations as of May 2025.
Over 6,500 stores.
Just in the U.S. And if you include their international stores, that's over 7,500 total globally. This incredible density offers unparalleled convenience for customers, ensuring they're almost always nearby.
Location, location, location.
It still matters. And a crucial metric is customer traffic. AutoZone captures 32.3% of consumer store visits. That's significantly ahead of O'Reilly and Advance Auto Parts, both of whom cover around 18% each.
So almost double the traffic share of its nearest competitors.
Roughly, yeah. So in terms of getting people through the door, AutoZone maintains a clear lead.
That kind of density in customer traffic sounds like it builds a very strong moat around their business, making it incredibly difficult for others to compete effectively. What are these core competitive advantages that make them so hard to beat?
Indeed, their durable market leadership is built on several key competitive advantages. First, it's that scale and store density we just talked about.
Right, the sheer size.
This massive store count not only means convenience, but also creates powerful economies of scale in purchasing, advertising, supply chain logistics. It helps them manage costs far more effectively than smaller competitors.
Okay, scale is one. But beyond just physical presence, how much does their brand and how they treat customers contribute to this moat? Do they genuinely foster a sense of loyalty, or is it just convenience?
No, it's definitely more than convenience. Their brand equity and customer focus are incredibly strong and, frankly, intentionally cultivated. AutoZone has built a powerful brand identity centered on a customer-first philosophy. They even call it the AutoZone Pledge.
The Pledge.
Yeah. Their staff, known internally as AutoZoners, are specifically trained to be knowledgeable and helpful. The goal is to transform what could be a purely transactional experience into a supportive one.
Helping people solve problems.
Exactly. And they have signature programs that really reinforce this, like the free loan-a-tool service and complimentary diagnostic checks. Think about it. When your car breaks down, maybe the check engine light is on. Getting a specialized tool for free or a quick diagnostic check can be incredibly helpful and memorable.
Yeah, that could save you a trip to the mechanic just for a diagnosis.
Right. It turns a one-time customer into loyal repeat business. It builds trust.
Those programs sound genuinely useful. I'll admit, I once tried to fix a leaky hose myself. Ended up with more parts on the garage floor than under the hood. So I can definitely see the appeal of those services.
Right.
But for a parts business, doesn't it ultimately all come down to having the right part at the right time? That seems like the ultimate operational advantage.
You've absolutely hit on arguably their most critical operational advantage, superior logistics and inventory management. Specifically, their highly optimized hub and spoke system.
Hub and spoke. Explain that.
It's basically a tiered system. They have their standard stores, which carry common parts. Then they have larger hub stores, which stock a wider variety. And then they have massive mega hubs. These things can carry over 100,000 unique stock keeping units, or SKUs.
100,000 different parts in one place.
Yeah, everything imaginable. This intricate network ensures that the right part, even a relatively obscure one, is available to customers whether you're a DIY mechanic or a professional shop on a same-day or next-day basis.
Why is that rapid availability so powerful? Does speed really matter that much in the world of car parts?
It's paramount. Especially for the professional segment, the DIFM market. Over 95% of aftermarket parts are purchased for immediate repairs.
You need it now.
You need it now. If a professional shop has a vehicle up on a lift, they're losing money every single hour. It sits there unproductive waiting for a part. So having that part readily available, even a rare one delivered quickly from a mega hub, is absolutely critical to their profitability and their customer satisfaction.
Right. Keeps the bays turning.
Exactly. This level of availability and logistical efficiency is extremely difficult for smaller competitors or, say, online-only players to match. It creates a formidable barrier to entry and a significant, durable competitive advantage for AutoZone.
Okay, so with that kind of operational strength in mind, who are their main rivals in this intense and concentrated market? Who keeps them on their toes?
They definitely face formidable competitors. O'Reilly Automotive, or RLI, is arguably AutoZone's fiercest rival. They're known for exceptional operational execution and a really strong dual market strategy, successfully serving both DIY and DIFM customers very effectively. These two, AutoZone and O'Reilly, are generally considered the clear leaders, the top tier in the industry.
Okay, O'Reilly is the main challenger. What about the others?
Then there's Advance Auto Parts, AAP. They serve as something of a cautionary tale in operational efficiency. Despite having a large store network, AAP has consistently underperformed financially.
Why is that?
Largely due to significant supply chain inefficiencies. For example, you mentioned logistics being key. AAP operates something like 46 distribution centers compared to AutoZone and O'Reilly's approximately 15 each.
46 versus 15, that's a huge difference.
It's a massive difference in complexity and cost. This disparity really highlights the importance of AutoZone's efficient supply chain as a true competitive edge. It's not just about having stores, it's about how you supply them.
Wow, that really underscores how streamlined logistics can be a make-or-break factor. What about NAPA? They seem to have a strong brand presence too, especially with garages.
NAPA, which is part of Genuine Parts Company, is indeed a strong brand, particularly in that DIFM segment. They actually often rank highest in terms of customer trust among professional mechanics.
Interesting.
However, they operate primarily through a fragmented franchise model, which is fundamentally different from AutoZone's corporate-owned structure. So while they're a significant player, their operational dynamics and how they go to market are quite distinct.
Okay, different business model. You mentioned earlier, and it keeps coming up, that the commercial or DIFM segment is AutoZone's primary growth area.
Can you elaborate on the size of that opportunity and AutoZone's specific strategy to capture more of it?
Yeah, the opportunity in the commercial or DIFM segment is just immense. It's roughly 3.5 times the size of the DIY market.
2.5 times bigger. And it remains highly fragmented. The top three retail players, AutoZone, O'Reilly, Advance, they only hold about 17% combined share of that professional market.
So huge potential for consolidation.
Massive opportunity for consolidation and market share gains. AutoZone's strategy here is very clear. They're leveraging their existing extensive store footprint and that advanced hub-and-spoke supply chain for rapid, reliable delivery directly to these professional repair shops. Their commercial programs are active in 92% of their domestic stores now.
They're really pushing into it.
Aggressively.
Yeah.
And it's yielded strong results. Commercial sales reached $4.6 billion in fiscal 2023, growing 8.7%. Now that growth rate has moderated from a peak of 26.5% back in 2022.
Still strong growth.
Still very strong growth, yeah. It continues to outpace their DIY growth and remains their number one strategic priority for future expansion. Management is very explicit about that.
Okay. So even though they're this huge brick-and-mortar chain, they must be adapting to the modern shopper and online trends too.
Yeah.
How are they handling the digital landscape? Is e-commerce a threat or an opportunity?
Well, what's important to understand first is that direct e-commerce disruption is somewhat limited in this specific industry. Why? Because of the immediate need and nature of most auto repairs.
Right. If your car is dead, you can't wait 2 days for shipping.
Exactly. You usually need that part now. However, AutoZone hasn't ignored digital. They've developed a robust online platform and actually lead their direct competitors in online traffic and click share.
So people are researching online first.
Yes. Their strategy is very much omnichannel. They cleverly leverage their physical stores as fulfillment centers for buy online, pick up in-store orders. This plays directly to their core strength of immediate availability. Customers can research online, confirm the part is in stock locally, pay for it, and then quickly retrieve it.
Best of both worlds, really.
Exactly. While e-commerce sales, at around $237 million in 2024, are still a small percentage of their total revenue, maybe 1-2%, they're a growing and essential part of their overall strategy. It's about integrating digital capabilities smartly to serve customer needs better, whether you're a home mechanic or a professional shop ordering parts.
That was a really comprehensive look at their business model and the competitive landscape. Now let's get into the numbers. How has AutoZone performed financially over time? You mentioned them being a model of consistency. What does that look like in real terms?
AutoZone truly is a model of consistency, especially when you look over the last decade or so. They've delivered stable, really best-in-class operating margins and exceptionally high return on invested capital, or ROIC.
We'll definitely need to unpack ROIC later.
We will. But just looking at the top line, from fiscal year 2015 to 2024, their annual revenue grew consistently from about $10.2 billion to nearly $18.5 billion. That represents a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of 6.8%.
Solid, steady growth.
Very solid. And that growth comes from a balanced mix of opening new stores and, importantly, increasing sales at their existing ones.
Okay, so what about those same store sales, or SSS?
Uh-huh.
That's often seen as a crucial indicator of a retailer's underlying health, right? Uh-huh. How have they fared there?
Domestic same store sales are indeed a key health indicator. They saw really robust growth coming out of the pandemic, 8.4% in fiscal 2022. Then it moderated to 3.4% in 2023 and a more modest 0.4% in 2024.
Flat in 2024, basically. Why the slowdown?
That moderation in 2024 really reflects a couple of things. One, the normalization of demand after those unusually high pandemic peaks. And two, increased macroeconomic pressure, particularly on that core DIY consumer. As inflation bit into household budgets for essentials, discretionary spending on things like car accessories or appearance products tended to slow down, and that directly impacts SSS.
Right, people prioritize needs over wants. Okay, speaking of margins, how well do they convert those sales into actual profit? Do they exhibit strong pricing power in what seems like a competitive market?
AutoZone's consistent profitability is really a hallmark of its operations. Their gross margin has consistently been very strong, hovering around 52-53%.
Over 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, which demonstrates excellent pricing power and efficient sourcing from suppliers. Now, it has faced some modest pressure recently, partly from the strategic expansion into the slightly lower margin commercial DIFM business.
Because they give pros better pricing?
Generally, yes. And also due to some non-cash LIFO inventory charges, that's an accounting method, last in, first out, that can impact reported margins during periods of rising costs, like we've seen with inflation. But overall, gross margin remains very healthy.
The operating margin, below the gross margin line.
Their operating margin, or EBIT margin earnings before interest and taxes, has historically been excellent, typically in the 19-20% range. It actually reached 20.5% in 2024.
20% operating margin, that's high for retail.
It is significantly higher than competitors like Advance Auto Parts, which really indicates a superior level of operational excellence. And their bottom line net margin is also robust, typically around 13-14%.
Those were impressive margins, especially in a retail environment.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let's talk about efficiency. How efficiently are they using their capital? You mentioned ROIC earlier. That's really where the rubber meets the road for investors, right? How much profit do they generate from the money they've actually invested into the business?
Exactly. This brings us to return on invested capital, or ROIC, which is a critical measure of how efficiently a company uses its capital, both debt and equity, to generate profit. And AutoZone's ROIC is, frankly, world class. For fiscal 2024, it was an astounding 49.7%.
Almost 50% ROIC.
Almost 50%. This tells you that management is incredibly effective at deploying capital. Every dollar they invest in a new store, a new distribution center, technology, it's generating nearly 50 cents in profit in return annually. That's truly elite performance and showcases their capital allocation prowess.
Okay, that's impressive. Now, I noticed in the analysis you provided that their return on equity, or ROE, isn't listed as a meaningful metric. Why is that? Does that indicate some kind of problem or something an investor should be concerned about?
That's a really important detail to understand, and it's definitely not a sign of distress. Quite the opposite, in a way. AutoZone has a very aggressive and long-standing share repurchase program, which we'll talk more about.
Buying back their own stock.
Constantly. Years and years of consistently buying back billions of dollars of their own stock have actually led to a negative stockholders' deficit on their balance sheet.
Negative equity. How does that happen?
Basically, they've bought back more stock value than their retained earnings and original capital combined. Because ROE uses stockholders' equity in its calculation, net income divided by equity, a negative number in the denominator completely distorts the ratio and makes it mathematically uninformative, often showing a huge negative number.
So it's just an accounting result of the buybacks.
Exactly. It's a direct result of a deliberate, long-term capital allocation strategy focused on shrinking the share count, not a sign of financial trouble.
Okay, that makes sense. So they must be generating a tremendous amount of cash then if they can afford those massive buybacks.
Yeah.
How do they manage that cash flow, particularly their working capital, inventory, receivables, payables?
They absolutely are a powerful and predictable cash flow machine. They generated $3.0 billion in cash from operating activities in fiscal 2024 alone. But here's a crucial detail that truly reveals their financial prowess. AutoZone consistently operates with a negative working capital cycle.
Negative working capital. That sounds counterintuitive. Usually businesses need working capital.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that means for a business like AutoZone and why it's so powerful?
Sure. Think about it like this. Imagine a business where you collect cash from your customers for the goods you sell before you even have to pay your suppliers for those same goods.
So they get the cash first, pay later.
Essentially, yes. That's what AutoZone achieves. Their accounts payable, the money they owe their suppliers, regularly exceeds the value of their merchandise inventory. At the end of fiscal 2024, their net inventory per store was actually negative $163,000.
Negative inventory per store.
On a net basis, factoring in payables. This means their suppliers are effectively providing AutoZone with a free, short-term loan, often for 60, 90 days or more. The company can then use this free cash to fund growth initiatives or, as we'll discuss, fuel their massive share repurchase program. It's an incredibly powerful financial advantage that significantly enhances their capital efficiency and frees up billions in cash.
That's an ingenious way to manage their money, truly a strategic goldmine hidden in the financials. So despite the negative equity on paper resulting from buybacks, is their overall balance sheet considered strong and stable? Can they handle their debt?
Yes, their overall financial strength is considered solid. They maintain an investment-grade credit rating from the major rating agencies, which directly reflects their stable and predictable cash flows. While the balance sheet does show significant debt and that negative equity we just discussed, this is viewed as an intentional outcome of their long-standing capital allocation strategy, using relatively low-cost debt to fund those highly accretive share repurchases. Their robust earnings and cash flow provide very strong coverage for all their interest obligations.
So the market understands the strategy?
The market and the credit agencies understand it, yes. This isn't just about accounting numbers. It's about a company that has deliberately engineered its finances to be incredibly efficient and shareholder-friendly, prioritizing per-share value growth above almost everything else.
We've seen their impressive financial engine and that incredibly disciplined approach to capital. But even in a mature industry, companies can't just stand still. What are AutoZone's key strategies for ensuring continued growth into the future? Where do they see opportunities?
AutoZone has a very disciplined focus on capital-efficient growth, even in a heavily penetrated market like the U.S. They aren't just resting on their laurels. They are still finding avenues for expansion.
Does that primarily mean just opening more and more stores in the U.S., or is there more to it than that?
Domestic store expansion is still definitely a factor. In fiscal 2024, for instance, they opened 132 net new domestic stores.
Still opening over 100 a year.
Right. But their strategy isn't just about adding stores blindly. It's about optimizing their footprint. That might mean opening in currently underserved areas, or sometimes strategically relocating existing stores to more advantageous sites with better visibility or access. It shows there's still some runway for physical expansion within the U.S., but it's very carefully targeted for maximum impact and return.
Okay, targeted U.S. growth.
Yep.
What about beyond U.S. borders? Are they looking internationally for new growth opportunities?
Absolutely. International expansion is a significant and perhaps often underappreciated growth vector for AutoZone. Mexico has been a major success story for them. It served as a proven template for their international strategy.
How big are they in Mexico now?
As of August 2024, they operate 794 stores there, and it's generating significant revenue over $2 billion in fiscal 2024, which was a robust 16.5% year-over-year increase. So Mexico is a strong, established international business.
Wow. Nearly 800 stores. That's a big footprint. Anywhere else?
Yes. Then they have Brazil. It's a newer market for them, but very promising. They had 127 stores there in fiscal 2024, generating revenue of about $185 million, which was up nearly 6% year over year. Brazil offers a huge addressable market for long-term growth, and they're essentially replicating their proven U.S. operational model there.
So international is a key growth lever. Now, we've talked about it several times already, but that commercial or DIFM segment seems to be a huge focus. Is that still considered their number one priority for growth? And what does that mean in practice day to day?
It absolutely is. Management explicitly identifies the commercial professional DIFM customer growth as their single most important growth opportunity. And remember why. The DIFM market is 3.5 times the size of DIY and still highly fragmented.
Right. Lots of share to grab.
Exactly. So the opportunity to gain significant market share is enormous. Their strategy and practice is very clear. They are aggressively investing in expanding and enhancing their hub and mega hub network.
To ensure parts availability for the pros.
Precisely. To ensure superior parts availability for professional mechanics. Because for these customers, speed and reliability are absolutely paramount. As we said, a car stuck on a lift means lost income for them. This focus has translated into those strong results, $4.6 billion in domestic commercial sales in fiscal 2023, and it continues to be the primary driver of overall growth for the company.
Okay, so it's not just about opening more stores or expanding geographically. They're also making big investments in the backbone of their operations, the logistics and tech. What kind of technology and supply chain optimization are they undertaking to keep that competitive edge sharp?
Yeah, this is where AutoZone truly stands out as more than just a parts retailer. It's also a sophisticated logistics and technology company at its core. They have continuous investment in tech and supply chain optimization. For example, they are currently building two new, highly automated distribution centers in the U.S.
New DCs.
Yes, slated to open in 2025. These are expected to increase their domestic distribution capacity by a significant 20%. And these aren't just warehouses. They're state-of-the-art facilities designed for maximum efficiency and throughput.
Using automation, I assume.
Highly automated, yes. Furthermore, they are increasingly using modern data analytics, including machine learning algorithms, to forecast demand much more accurately and to optimize their inventory assortments right down to the local store level.
So, getting smarter about what parts to stock where.
Exactly. Ensuring the right part is in the right place at the right time, more often. They're constantly evolving their operations using technology to get you, whether you're DIY or DIM, the right part, faster and more reliably.
That focus on efficiency and growth is clear. But how does AutoZone ultimately decide where to put its money? With such strong cash flows, what's their guiding philosophy for allocating capital? It seems very deliberate.
It is incredibly deliberate. This is arguably AutoZone's most defining characteristic and a primary driver of its long-term success. Their guiding philosophy is remarkably straightforward and rigorously applied. First, prioritize investments that generate high returns, and second, return all excess capital to shareholders in the most efficient manner possible.
So, no growth for growth's sake.
Absolutely not. They fundamentally avoid that trap. Management adheres to a strict internal hurdle rate. They require all discretionary investments, things like building new stores, expanding hubs, major technology projects, to generate a minimum 15% after-tax internal rate of return, or IRR.
15% after-tax IRR? That's a high bar.
It's an incredibly high and disciplined bar. IRR is a powerful investment metric that measures the profitability of potential projects over their lifetime. This discipline prevents them from pursuing projects that might dilute returns or offer only marginal benefits, ensuring capital is always working hard for shareholders.
Okay, so a 15% minimum return hurdle for every major investment. How does that translate into their actual capital deployment? Is there a clear pecking order for how they use their cash?
Yes, they follow a very clear and consistent hierarchy, almost like clockwork. First priority, reinvest in the business. They fund all the organic growth initiatives that meet that demanding 15% IRR hurdle. That includes new stores, expanding the hub and mega hub network, investing in supply chain improvements, technology upgrades, etc.
All the things that drive future profitable growth.
Correct. Then, after all those high return internal investment opportunities have been fully funded, the second step is executed. Return capital to shareholders via share repurchases. They systematically use 100% of their remaining free cash flow for buybacks.
100% of remaining cash goes to buybacks. Not some, all.
All of it. It's a very clear policy.
So share repurchases are obviously a massive part of their strategy, almost to the exclusion of other things like dividends. How significant is this program historically, and what does it actually mean for you as a potential shareholder? Why is it so important?
The share repurchase program is truly the cornerstone of AutoZone's value creation strategy, and it's been a compounding machine for shareholders over decades. This program is one of the most aggressive and long-running in the entire stock market. Since its inception back in 1998, the company has repurchased over $37.5 billion of its own stock.
$37.5 billion. That's an astronomical sum.
It really is. To put that into perspective for recent activity, in fiscal 2024 alone, they repurchased over $3.1 billion of their shares.
So how does that specifically benefit you as a shareholder? What's the mechanism?
Its effectiveness is undeniable and quite simple mathematically. By consistently reducing the number of shares outstanding in the market, it mechanically boosts earnings per share, or EPS.
Because the E in PE is divided by fewer S's.
Exactly. The total earnings pie is divided among fewer slices, so each slice gets bigger. For example, look at their share count reduction. The diluted share count has been reduced by over 30% in just the last 5 years alone, shrinking from 24.5 million shares in fiscal 2020 to just 17.1 million in fiscal 2024.
Down by almost a third in 5 years.
Right. This mechanical reduction in the denominator of the EPS calculation is a powerful and reliable engine of per share value growth. It means that even if the company's total net income grows modestly, EPS can still grow significantly because that income is spread across fewer shares, concentrating the ownership value for the remaining shareholders.
Okay, so they focus intensely on buybacks instead of, say, paying a dividend, which many large, stable companies do. And they don't seem to do many big acquisitions either. What's the rationale behind those specific choices?
That's precisely right. No dividend is paid. It's a policy they've maintained since going public decades ago. Management consistently states their belief that reinvesting capital back into their high ROIC business, meeting that 15% hurdle, and aggressively repurchasing shares creates superior long-term value for shareholders compared to paying out a dividend. It allows investors to benefit from the compounding growth within the company.
They let shareholders decide when to take cash out by selling shares.
Essentially, yes. And their acquisition policy is similarly very disciplined. Their strategy is overwhelmingly centered on organic growth. They only make occasional, very strategic tuck-in acquisitions. These are usually smaller deals to acquire specific capabilities, like AllData for diagnostic software or IMC for import parts distribution.
So no big splashy mergers.
They actively avoid large transformative mergers and acquisitions that could potentially dilute their high returns on capital or distract management. This disciplined, almost formulaic approach to capital allocation is genuinely rare and constitutes a powerful competitive advantage. It directly impacts the intrinsic value of each share over time and showcases a management team that truly acts like long-term owners focused on per-share value.
Okay, so AutoZone clearly has an impressive financial engine and a very clear discipline strategy, but no company operates in a vacuum, especially over the last few turbulent years. What kind of bumps have they encountered on the road recently, say from 2022 to 2024? It hasn't all been smooth sailing, presumably.
No, definitely not entirely smooth. The period from 2022 to 2024 was indeed marked by a challenging macroeconomic environment. We had high inflation, supply chain trying to normalize post-pandemic, shifts in consumer behavior. However, AutoZone's business model did demonstrate significant resilience through all of this, even though it wasn't entirely immune to these external pressures.
How exactly did inflation impact them? Did they just have to absorb the rising costs, or were they able to pass them on to customers effectively?
Inflation had a multifaceted impact, really. On one hand, they faced significant cost pressures, higher product acquisition costs from their suppliers, and rising wages for their AutoZoners. However, as a clear market leader in a generally rational industry.
Meaning competitors weren't starting price wars?
Generally, no. AutoZone was largely successful in passing these increased costs on to consumers through higher prices. This discipline helped protect their robust gross profit margins for the most part. However, inflation did create some volatility in their reported gross margins because of those non-cash LIFO inventory accounting charges we mentioned earlier. LIFO effects can make margins look a bit lumpier during periods of rapidly rising costs.
Okay, so they managed costs, but what about their customers? Did inflation change how people bought parts, especially those DIY customers who you said are often more price sensitive?
Yes, the impact on consumer behavior was quite pronounced, particularly for their core DIY customer segment, and especially those with lower incomes. Faced with rising costs for absolute essentials like food and fuel, these consumers often pulled back sharply on discretionary spending.
The things they could put off.
Exactly. This was clearly visible in AutoZone's sales mix data. They saw a notable decline in sales of discretionary items like car accessories, waxes, cleaning supplies, appearance products. This trend was a primary cause of that moderation, that near flatness we saw in domestic same-store sales growth in fiscal 2024. The needs-based repair parts held up better.
Okay, that makes sense. Beyond inflation, were there any lingering issues from the global supply chain snarls or the tight labor market that affected their actual day-to-day operations?
Yes, definitely. While the really acute supply chain disruptions of the peak pandemic era have largely subsided, the overall operating environment hasn't fully returned to, say, pre-2020 levels of efficiency and predictability. Management themselves noted in fiscal 2023 that their supply chain hadn't yet reached historical productivity levels.
So they're still working through it.
They are. And in response, AutoZone is investing substantially in those new distribution centers and technology we discussed, specifically to enhance resilience and efficiency going forward. The labor market also presented ongoing challenges. It remained a competitive environment for hourly retail workers, leading to continued wage inflation and higher employee turnover than historically normal.
Which impacts costs and service.
Exactly. AutoZone responded with targeted investments in wages and benefits for its AutoZoners to try and improve retention and maintain that crucial customer service quality at the store level.
So this period of economic uncertainty seems to have created a bit of a mixed bag for them. Clear challenges in some areas, but perhaps reinforcing opportunities in others, like people keeping cars longer. How did AutoZone strategically respond to balance these pressures?
Yeah, there was a fascinating dual effect from the economic uncertainty. On one hand, yes, it pressured consumer budgets and hurt those discretionary DIY sales. But on the other hand, it also made new and used cars even less affordable for many people.
Pushing prices even higher.
Right, which powerfully reinforces that core repair, don't replace dynamic. That's a fundamental driver of the entire aftermarket industry and supports the continued aging of the vehicle fleet. AutoZone's primary strategic response to navigate this was clear. They accelerated their push into the more resilient DIFM segment.
Focusing more on the professional shops.
Even more intensely, yes, because that segment is generally less sensitive to consumer discretionary spending fluctuations. These are often non-negotiable, needs-based repairs that shops perform regardless of the broader economy. This allowed AutoZone to capture the demand that remained essential, offsetting some of the DIY softness.
Okay, that makes strategic sense. Now, all these strategies, the financial maneuvers, navigating challenges, it all requires strong leadership to guide the ship through complex waters. What can you tell us about AutoZone's management quality and their corporate governance? Is the leadership team a strength?
AutoZone's long-term success is definitely deeply rooted in the quality, experience, and discipline of its management team. The current president and CEO, Philip B. Daniele III, who took over the top role in January 2024, is a perfect example. He's a long-tenured company veteran, having been with AutoZone since the 1990s.
Decades of experience there.
Yes. And importantly, he previously led their crucial commercial DIFM division, which is their main growth engine. This extensive internal experience ensures strategic continuity and a profound understanding of the business from the ground up. There's a deep bench there.
And that rigorous capital allocation policy we keep coming back to, do they genuinely stick to it year after year, or is it more of a theoretical framework that they might deviate from?
Their unwavering discipline in capital allocation is absolutely a core tenet, not just theory. For decades now, they have consistently adhered to that clear framework. Invest internally only in projects meeting that high 15% after-tax IRR hurdle, and then return all remaining free cash flow to shareholders through share repurchases. This consistent, almost formulaic approach demonstrates a management team that truly thinks and acts like long-term owners focused on per-share value. It's incredibly rare to see such long-term consistency and discipline, and it's highly valuable for investors.
How are executives incentivized? Does their pay align with this focus on profitable growth and shareholder returns?
Yes, their executive compensation program is exceptionally well designed to align management's incentives directly with shareholder value creation. A significant portion of executive pay, both short-term and long-term, is tied to two primary financial metrics: earnings before interest and taxes, or EBIT, and that critical return on invested capital, or ROIC.
So profit growth and capital efficiency.
Precisely. EBIT incentivizes top-line and bottom-line profit growth, while ROIC ensures that this growth is achieved efficiently without wasteful or unproductive capital investment. Furthermore, their long-term incentives are also tied directly to total shareholder return, or TSR, relative to peers. This directly links executive rewards to the actual returns experienced by investors over multi-year periods.
That sounds like a very transparent and shareholder-friendly structure.
Yeah.
Do they communicate openly about their challenges as well, or do they tend to just highlight their successes?
They generally maintain a high standard of transparency with the investment community. They are usually quite candid in discussing recent issues when they arise. For example, they've talked openly about past execution shortfalls in store openings or supply chain productivity challenges back in fiscal 2023, and certainly the macroeconomic pressures affecting their DIY customers recently. This openness builds credibility and allows you, the investor, to make well-informed decisions based on a balanced picture. It really demonstrates that strong leadership and a clear, consistent strategic vision are just as important as the operational details for long-term success.
Okay, we've covered the company pretty much from top to bottom: the industry, the operations, the financials, the strategy, the leadership. Now let's put on an investor hat. If someone were considering AutoZone from an investment perspective today, what does its valuation currently look like? Does all this quality and consistency come at a premium price?
Yes, absolutely. AutoZone consistently commands a premium valuation relative to the broader market and also relative to most of its direct peers. And generally speaking, this premium is seen by the market as justified, given its superior financial track record and consistent growth trajectory.
What kind of multiples are we talking about?
Historically, it's trailing 12 months price-to-earnings, or PE ratio, has tended to fluctuate somewhere in the range of the mid-teens up to the mid-20s. As of mid-2025, based on the data you provided, it's trading towards the higher end of that historical range, somewhere between 28x and 30x TTM earnings.
So definitely not cheap on an earnings basis right now.
Not cheap, no. Similarly, its enterprise value to EBITDA or EBITDA ratio, another common valuation metric, has also expanded recently. It's running around 19.0x as of mid-2025, which also reflects a premium compared to its historical average, which was more in the low to mid-teens.
Okay, premium multiples. How does that stack up against its direct competitors like O'Reilly or the struggling Advanced Auto Parts? Do they all trade in the same ballpark?
Good question. Looking at the pure valuation comparison, AutoZone and O'Reilly Automotive, who, remember, are seen as the two best-in-class operators in this space, they consistently trade at similar premium multiples to each other. The market recognizes their quality.
So they trade in lockstep, more or less?
Often, yes, reflecting similar performance and outlook. Advance Auto Parts, however, is a different story. It trades at a very steep discount to both AZO and ORLI, sometimes even showing negative multiples due to its recent unprofitability. That discount is a direct reflection of its significant operational underperformance and those supply chain issues we discussed earlier.
The market is punishing them for poor execution.
Exactly. And NAPA, which is part of the larger, more diversified Genuine Parts company, typically trades at lower multiples than AutoZone or O'Reilly. That reflects its more diversified business model, which includes industrial parts, and historically somewhat lower growth and profitability profile compared to the pure-play auto parts retailers.
Okay, so the premium valuation for AutoZone is pretty consistent and seems rational relative to peers. What specifically justifies the market's willingness to pay that much, maybe 28, 30 times earnings, for a company in what some might still call a boring industry like auto parts?
Well, the market's willingness to award AutoZone that premium valuation is seen as rational and is generally well supported by several fundamental characteristics that investors prize. First, it's considered a defensive growth business. It's highly resilient to economic cycles because, as we discussed, demand is largely driven by non-discretionary needs-based repairs.
People have to fix their cars.
Generally, yes. Second, it has a multi-decade track record of remarkable consistency and predictability in revenue growth, earnings growth, and cash flow generation. The market loves predictability. Third, there are its superior returns, specifically that world-class near 50% ROIC, demonstrating an elite ability to generate profits from its capital base. That's a rare quality.
And the buybacks.
And finally, yes, it's a creative capital allocation strategy, primarily through that aggressive and consistent share repurchase program. This provides a powerful and reliable mechanical driver of EPS growth year after year, which directly supports a higher valuation multiple.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, what about its free cash flow yield? Sometimes investors look at that. Is that an attractive metric for investors looking at AutoZone right now?
Based on a trailing 12-month free cash flow of approximately $2 zillion and a market capitalization hovering around $68 billion, AutoZone's free cash flow yield calculates out to around 2.9%.
Under 3%. Not particularly high.
No, it isn't high in absolute terms compared to, say, the yield on bonds or some other stocks. However, that yield figure doesn't fully capture the total value being created for shareholders. It's really important to remember that this cash isn't just sitting idly or being paid out inefficiently. It's being strategically reinvested back into the business, into those high-return growth projects, meeting the 15% IRR hurdle, and then the rest is used for those incredibly accretive share buybacks, which mechanically boost per share value over time, even if it doesn't show up directly in the yield calculation.
So the yield is low, partly because the return is coming via buybacks and reinvestment, not dividends.
Precisely. It's a total return story, not an income yield story.
Got it. Now, every investment, no matter how strong the company appears, comes with risks. What are the potential bumps in the road or pitfalls that could impact AutoZone's business and its stock performance in the future? What should investors be watching out for?
Absolutely. While the business is robust, there are certainly risks to consider across several categories. From a business and competitive standpoint, the most obvious is the intense rivalry with O'Reilly. They are both excellent operators, and that constant competition could potentially lead to price erosion if things get too aggressive, although the industry has historically been quite rational. There's also the risk of market saturation limiting new store growth opportunities, particularly in the U.S.
Running out of good places to build new stores?
Potentially, yes, in the most desirable locations. And economic cycles, while less impactful than for many industries, still play a role. A really severe recession could cause people to defer even necessary repairs for a while, And persistent inflation, as we've seen, definitely pressures that discretionary spending in the DIY segment.
Okay, competitive and economic risks. What about operational risks, given how critical their complex supply chain and large workforce are?
Operational risks are definitely significant. Their core value proposition, especially to the professional DIFM customer, hinges on flawless supply chain execution, having that right part at the right time consistently. Any major disruption, whether it's to their distribution centers, their inventory systems, or transportation, could lead to lost sales and, more damagingly, erode that crucial customer trust, especially with the pros.
Right. Reliability is key for DIFM.
Absolutely. Additionally, labor and workforce management are key ongoing risks. They rely on a massive workforce, over 126,000 AutoZoners. Continued wage inflation, a competitive labor market making it hard to attract and retain good staff, and high turnover can significantly impact operating costs and, critically, the quality of customer service at the store level.
Okay. And financially, you mentioned the high debt and negative equity resulting from those aggressive buybacks. Does that structure introduce any unique financial risks for the company if economic conditions were to really sour significantly?
Yes, there are financial risks associated with that capital structure. Due to their aggressive share repurchase program, funded partly by debt, the company operates with significant financial leverage and that technical negative stockholders' equity position. While their strong, consistent cash flows comfortably service the debt under current and historical conditions, a severe and prolonged downturn in earnings that significantly impacted cash generation could increase financial risk. It could potentially limit their flexibility for future investments or force them to slow down or pause the buyback program, which is a key part of their investment thesis.
So a deep recession would be a stress test.
It would be, yes.
Yeah.
More so than for a company with a more conservative balance sheet.
Finally, looking further out, what's the biggest long-term structural risk on the horizon for AutoZone, particularly when we think a decade or more into the future?
Yeah.
We touched on it earlier.
The EV transition remains by far the most significant long-term structural risk, or perhaps transformation, facing the company and the industry. A faster-than-anticipated adoption curve for electric vehicles would absolutely accelerate the obsolescence of a large portion of AutoZone's current product portfolio, particularly all those components tied directly to the internal combustion engine.
All the filters, plugs, exhaust parts.
Exactly. This would necessitate a significant and potentially costly pivot in their inventory management, their supply chain sourcing, the technical training for their AutoZoners, and their overall corporate strategy. Furthermore, thinking even longer term, potential shifts away from widespread personal car ownership, perhaps due to the eventual rise of fully autonomous vehicles or greatly expanded ride-sharing services, could theoretically shrink the total addressable market for automotive aftermarket parts in general, although that's a much more distant and speculative risk.
Okay, lots to consider there. So considering all these factors, the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, the risks, how do investors typically weigh the bull versus the bear case for AutoZone? What are the core arguments for being positive versus being cautious?
The bull case for AutoZone essentially sees it as a high-quality compounder. The argument rests on several pillars. One, it operates in a resilient industry with powerful secular tailwinds, especially that aging vehicle fleet. Two, it holds a dominant market position with a strong defensible operational moat built on scale and logistics. Three, it boasts a superior and remarkably consistent financial model, highlighted by that world-class ROIC. Four, it has a proven shareholder-friendly capital allocation strategy centered on those aggressive and accretive buybacks. And five, it still has clear capital-efficient growth pathways ahead, particularly in the DIFM segment in international markets.
Okay, that's the compelling bull argument. What's the counter-argument? What does the bear case focus on?
The bear case centers primarily on a few key concerns. One is the intense competition, particularly from the equally well-run O'Reilly, which limits pricing power and market share gains. Two is the current premium valuation, which arguably leaves little room for operational missteps or unexpected negative surprises. The stock price already reflects a lot of the good news. Three is the near-term macroeconomic sensitivity, particularly the impact of inflation and economic uncertainty on the important DIY customer segment spending. And four, of course, is that long-term EV disruption uncertainty, which could continue to weigh on the stock's valuation multiple over time if investors aren't fully convinced of AutoZone's adaptation strategy.
Makes sense. So for listeners thinking about this as a potential investment or just wanting to track the company, what key metrics should they be monitoring closely to gauge AutoZone's ongoing performance and future prospects?
I'd say keep a close eye on DIFM sales growth. That's their number one stated priority, so you want to see continued momentum there. Also, watch overall same-store sales trends, both domestic and international, as a gauge of underlying business health. Monitor gross and operating margins closely for any signs of sustained erosion due to competitive pressure or cost inflation. Keep track of the pace of share repurchases as the company continuing to execute on that key part of its strategy. And critically, monitor that return on invested capital, ROIC, to ensure their capital efficiency remains elite, as that's a cornerstone of the quality argument.
Okay, great list of metrics. And finally, based on everything we've discussed, where does a company like AutoZone generally fit within an investment portfolio? Who is it best suited for?
Given its characteristics, AutoZone is likely best suited for long-term, growth-oriented investors who are seeking exposure to a high-quality, defensive business with a proven track record of compounding shareholder value over time. It's definitely not for income investors, as it pays no dividend, and it's likely not for deep value seekers because it consistently trades at that premium valuation. It fits most comfortably in the growth at a reasonable price, or simply quality investing buckets. Understanding these nuanced arguments, the bull, the bear, the risks, the valuation, helps you, the listener, assess the full picture of AutoZone's potential, both its formidable strengths and the significant challenges it undoubtedly faces on the road ahead. Hashtag outro in clip.
Well, we've just navigated the complex and surprisingly dynamic world of the automotive aftermarket and explored in depth how AutoZone has built this truly resilient and highly profitable business. We've really pulled back the curtain on everything from its incredibly efficient hub-and-spoke logistics system, which is key to its success.
Absolutely critical.
To its highly disciplined, almost formulaic capital allocation strategy focusing on high returns and buybacks. You've learned how even something like an aging vehicle fleet becomes a powerful tailwind for their business, and how a company can strategically think about adapting to future shifts like the rise of electric vehicles, potentially turning long-term threats into new kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, our key takeaway for you today is really this. AutoZone isn't just selling car parts off a shelf. It's operating as a masterclass in operational efficiency, in strategic capital deployment, and in deeply understanding the core, often non-discretionary, needs of its customers, whether you're a DIYer tackling a project in your garage or a professional mechanic trying to run a profitable shop. Their ability to generate cash, deploy that capital effectively into high-return areas, and leverage their dominant market position truly defines their long-term success.
So, thinking about all that, what does this mean for the road ahead? Here's a final provocative thought for you to consider. Given that long-term fundamental shift towards EVs, but also acknowledging the new, different opportunities they might present, how do you think AutoZone's current strategic investments, like those huge new automated distribution centers and that relentless focus on serving the professional do-it-for-me segment, will ultimately reshape its identity and its market position a decade from now? Will its powerful compounding machine of share repurchases be enough on its own to navigate such a fundamental industry shift? Or will entirely new types of AutoZoners with different skills and expertise be needed to truly thrive in a potentially fully electric automotive future? Something to consider as you see those familiar red and black stores on your next drive.